Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And this week, Tyler, let's just get right to it. We got so much to talk about. We got college football playoff rankings. We got to review the championship games. All the Florida NFL teams won.
It's been like weeks.
Don't understand that one. But let's go ahead and jump right into it. But before we begin, we're going to start with quick hits. And I think the first order of business, this past Friday around midnight, so early Saturday, late Friday, early Saturday, December 1st and 2nd, or November 30th and December 1st, former President George H.W. Bush, President 41, passed away in his 90s. So, I mean, we don't talk politics on this podcast, but I think, you know, a former president died. I think there's a certain amount of respect to be shown.
Yeah.
And he's one of the last few Republicans that stood for something valuable. And, you know, I can respect the differences in policy and stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, just rest in peace. Mm-hmm. When a former president dies, that's always there. Exactly. Is, like you said, there's a matter of respect that mm-hmm. has to go to that.
And did you know that he was the former captain of the Yale baseball team?
I do now.
I found out ESPN did like a 5-minute thing on him on Saturday, and that was one of the things they mentioned. And he's in the World Golf Hall of Fame.
Oh, St. Augustine in my town.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah, the World Golf Hall of Fame is in St. Augustine, like right south of Jacksonville.
So
I've been there a couple times. They've got a great IMAX theater.
Good to know. Good to know next time I'm in St. Augustine. no, but I found it interesting that he did still have some sports ties. And he was a huge Astros fan, resident of Houston, and the Houston Texans had a moment of silence before their game on Sunday for him. So just given that, let's go ahead and move on from the sad stuff and go to the happier stuff, which, Tyler, I want to say personally, congratulations to you on the opening of your show, Who Wants to Love Forever, at the annual Florida Players New Works Festival.
Thank you very much.
Had a good weekend, right?
Yeah, it was a successful weekend, successful show. Mm-hmm. People really liked it. I'm glad because my 100, I had two fears going into it. It was that, one, the actors weren't going to remember their lines, which they did. So, the other one was that I hope people would get it. They would get into it. From the get-go, people loved it. So it was really good to see all the hard work pay off. Wonderful. I'm very proud of my directors and my actors and all that for making it come to life. It was a great weekend.
And I'm proud of you, my friend, for putting it on paper and putting it up on a stage, because we all know that's the hardest part to do, putting it on paper. And then once you put it on paper, getting it on stage is a whole other animal. Those of us who work in theater. So thank you for going through that. I'm excited to read the play this week when my schedule dies down a little bit and I get into more of a routine and I have time to read stuff. So I will give you personally, Tyler, not to the viewers, but I will give you a full review of what I think.
Yes, thank you.
Moving forward, Tyler. All right, big portion of quick hits here. There's some coaching turnover going on right now, my man.
Yes, it's coach turnover season.
And I think we begin with the saddest moment of all. Grand Wizard Bill Snyder is retiring and leaving Kansas State after over 25 years of coaching at the helm. I need a 5-second moment of silence here. All right, there we go. This is big, man.
This is huge for, like, when you have a coach who your stadium is literally named after.
The highway
and he still
is named after him.
The highway is named after, and he's still coaching there, and he leaves. Like, this is huge. Yeah. Bill Snyder had a great tenure at Kansas State, but, like, this is huge for Kansas State and the fact of, like, Bill Snyder is the only person that has ever won there,
mm-hmm.
like, consistently. And this is just a monumental thing just because, like, for the structure of the program, for that job just being open. Mm-hmm. But also it's kind of really sad because we don't get to see Bill Snyder anymore.
Right. He's someone that took – players that were undervalued and not respected coming out of high school and turned them into very serviceable and above average college football players. He turned a program that was averaging 4-8 and made them average 8-4. And to do that in Manhattan, Kansas, of all places, is in the heart of basketball territory, is a hard thing to do. So I literally tip my cap to Bill Snyder. Great coach, great person. And we hope that you're somehow, some way involved in our sporting lives going forward. I don't want to not hear from him anymore. So congratulations on a wonderful career to you.
Wonderful career. Yep.
Moving forward, Jim McElwain, which I don't know if you've heard of him. He
never heard of him. Never don't remember a single thing.
Not at all.
Never heard of him.
No. Okay. No. Jim McElwain, former Florida football coach, former Alabama offensive coordinator, and most recently former Michigan wide receivers coach. Jim McElwain has accepted the job to take over Central Michigan, the Chippewas, in the MAC. Jim McElwain is heading to MAC.
All I gotta say, there's no ocean surrounding Michigan, and therefore there are no sharks. So you know what? His tenure's probably gonna be pretty safe there.
Gonna be pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an interesting hire. This is an interesting hire, to say the least.
Yeah. I still think – so my understanding of Jim McElwain, I think he can be a really successful head coach at a smaller school. Mm-hmm. Because the issue is that when he was at Florida, part of the issue is that he didn't want to recruit. He didn't want to do all this extra stuff. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to be the guy in charge. And at Florida, even if you are in charge, there's always going to be people you have to service. There's always, like when you're at a big school, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be Nick Saban at Florida and have the Nick Saban level of control.
Right.
And it's so much easier to get to that level of control at a smaller school where there's not that many resources to give you, but you will give them to you.
Right.
And you're the guy. You're in a small market. You're the guy. But at places like Florida, at a place like Georgia, at a place like Ohio State, even, it's hard. It's just very hard to get to that point.
Right.
So I think that – I actually think that this might work out for Central Michigan if as long as Jim McElwain does not hire Doug Nussmeier as his offensive coordinator.
And with that, we move forward because I don't even want to go there.
Flashbacks.
Nightmare. With that, we move forward. Speaking of offensive coordinators, Cliff Kingsbury, you would know as former Texas Tech coach, is rumored to take the USC offensive coordinator job. But – according to Jeff Darlington, Gator great, he has reported that Cliff Kingsbury has yet to accept that job because he has other offers on the table and he's waiting for NFL offers, but not just NFL coordinator offers, but head coaching offers as well. There is no confirmation or anything official yet, but that's what Jeff Darlington is hearing. That's what he tweeted out, and Jeff Darlington is a squeaky clean track record. He doesn't tweet it out unless he's pretty sure about it. So it's going to be interesting to see how Kingsbury's coaching situation plays out for next season.
Yeah, it's the issue here mostly is that this is just the difference in time between the college football and NFL coaching vacancy carousel. Because in college, the season's the regular season's over. This is the time where people start changing jobs.
Right.
NFL season still has five games left. Mm-hmm. So he would have to wait realistically 5 weeks to see all the options that are going to be on the table.
Right.
And whereas college jobs don't want to wait that long for their guy. Mm-hmm. Because that puts them behind the arms race. The early signing period will have already passed.
Mm-hmm. Which is what, in a week?
Yeah, in a week. That's the issue. I'm very interested to see how it plays out. I would absolutely love it if he went to the USC coordinator job for two reasons, because we called it. And also because it would be fun to watch.
I think it would be outstanding to watch. It'd be very fun to watch. But I understand if he wants to go to the NFL and pursue other options. Speaking of Texas Tech, Matt Wells has replaced Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech. So they are not without – their coaching vacancy is filled at the moment. One coaching vacancy that is open is Georgia Tech. Paul Johnson retired. The triple option is no more.
Well, I mean – I would assume.
Right.
It's just they haven't actually said if they're going to stray away from the triple option. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. It's an interesting question because it's the triple option is part of what's kept them competitive despite being a second fiddle program. Mm-hmm. But Georgia Tech, I feel like from what I've heard and what I always felt like, is a job that has massive potential.
Right.
From a recruiting base, from being in Atlanta, from being in the ACC, like it's a, and it's a recruiting potential and a job potential that isn't maximized by using the option. So if I were them, I would try and stray away from it and hire a guy that
Cliff Clinsbury?
I mean, can you imagine the transition from an air from the triple option to the air raid?
I saw a meme.
It's not even like a smooth like steep incline or decline. It's just like, all right, we're going up.
I saw a meme that said the Georgia Tech players after realizing they need to know more than seven plays, and it's just the woman looking with the math formulas, like questioning and not knowing anything that's going on, just like, wait, what's going on? And then, I thought that was great.
Passing plays.
Passing. Wait, we have to throw wait, you can throw this? Like, that's allowed?
I mean, I know other teams could do it, but like, I didn't know we were allowed to as well.
I thought it was an NCAA rule that Georgia Tech had to run the football no matter what.
it's very interesting to see how that'll play out.
Well, another coaching vacancy is the University of Louisville, and Jeff Brohm, head coach at Purdue, was rumored to go back to his alma mater to take that job. Turns out, Jeff Brohm is staying at Purdue. Those reports were false.
That is, it's just very interesting.
What do you think?
To me.
Because here's the question of like how important. Obviously, it's different for everyone, but like, Jeff Brohm is clearly putting his loyalty and his current situation with his current team and players ahead of, I don't want to say loyalty, but ahead of what we would imagine is most people's dream, which is to lead your alma mater to greatness. Like what's happening with Northwestern, where their coach has been there for 7-8 years, and he's a coach that could be poached by other bigger programs, but he said, I want to stay at Northwestern because this is where I went to school, this is where I played, and I have that emotional attachment, you know? So it's a matter of like what he chose, basically, right?
Yeah, I think I think a lot of this comes down to, I think Jeff Brohm thinks that he's going to have a really good team next year at Purdue. And that, I mean, because he's getting pretty much everybody back. And on top of that, more bigger jobs may be open. Because typically what happens is small coaching carousels are followed by big coaching cycles. Mm-hmm. Last year was a huge coaching cycle. Yeah. There were a bunch of turnover at high-profile jobs. Mm-hmm. Whereas this year it's a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. And it's likely that he's betting on himself. From what I've heard, I mean, you never know how people think about their alma mater.
Right.
Like, to some people, it's more important than others.
Right, right.
And maybe it's different for you and me. You being a recent graduate, me being a senior at Florida. Mm-hmm. Like, we feel super connected to the place where we used to go. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that it's been 20 years.
Right.
And they'll always have that with them. But another thing that I've heard is that Louisville's athletic department is kind of in a mess right now.
Yeah.
They just had to fire a new AD. They're firing a bunch of old coaches, bringing in new ones because they're trying to
revamp the they department. Had the Patino scandal. They hired Bobby Petrino, who had some scandal of his own at Arkansas before. Like,
yeah,
they've had their
and
fans.
Then now they had to pay that buyout, and they got a new athletic director. So part of it I heard is that they can't give him probably the money you think that most people would think that they can give him, and. That it's kind of like, we'll give like, oh, you get to come home, and because of that, we're not going to pay you as much because you would want to come here,
right?
Is what I'm
hearing. They want him to take a home team discount,
yeah. And I don't know if he's okay. And from what I've heard, I'm not really sure if he's okay with that when he thinks he could get paid more to go to a better job,
right? And I don't blame him for that.
I mean, yeah, everybody's wired differently in that regard. I'm very interested to see how it plays out,
right. Well,
and where Louisville goes from here, because that was like the assumption. It was like, okay, Jeff Brohm's going to go there.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why this is such a big thing for me. Well, let's the last little bit of college football news. The bowls have been announced. We will get into them in depth next week on our annual bowl preview extravaganza. But just to keep updated, the Florida Gators will be playing Michigan in the Peach Bowl. We will have our thoughts on that next week. because there are some thoughts to be had.
Oh, yeah.
But we do get a New Year's Six Bowl, and we get to play Michigan. So we'll talk about that next week. The top four in college football for the playoff. We're going to briefly say them. We'll talk about this later on in playoff in more in depth. But our top four that will be participating in the college football playoff are Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Notre Dame 3, and Oklahoma 4. We will talk about that later on in the show. Just wanted to get that out there because I know that is the big, big topic of discussion this week. And then before we go into the conference championships, MLS playoff update, Portland and Atlanta, Saturday, 8 p.m. on Fox. It's MLS Cup Final. It's one game. Highly recommend everyone watch Atlanta. It'll be in Atlanta. There will be 70,000 people in that stadium. Did you know Atlanta's a soccer town now?
I heard it was just recently rebranded.
Because if you recently rebranded, like what? Like it's Wells Fargo after the whole scandals they had and they had to rebrand.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly
the scandal was 28-3. The scandal was the 28-3 and Georgia losing two championships in 2 years.
In the same building.
Yeah. Too soon.
Not soon enough, in my opinion.
No, but Atlanta United packs 70,000 people in that stadium while the Falcons are struggling to get, I think, 40,000 in there. So it's a good time. I highly recommend everyone watch it. It's the last game of the season. It's the championship game. The scenes will be fun. Playing a really good Portland team. Highly recommend that. All right, Tyler, let's get into it. Conference championship game recap. I'm going to do them in order of the way that they happened, which is the way I wrote them down. We're going to start on Friday. We had the Pac-12 championship game. Washington beats Utah 10-3. And Washington, that touchdown was a pick six. I put down offense. What's that? Because it looked like neither team knew what that was.
The Pac-12's got to be so pissed at everything that happened in this game.
Yo, for sure.
Because on top,
and then watching Washington
them,
State just look at them at home, like we could have dropped 70 points.
Yeah, and just like on top of everything that like goes against the Pac-12 championship game, being in Levi Stadium, being on Friday night, mm-hmm. like nobody wanted to go mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah, it's can get tickets
10-3.
You can get tickets for like $17 to the championship game, the Pac-12 title game.
And it's so weird that Washington's like a down team, mm-hmm. it, like for their standards now.
Yeah,
Chris
they're having
Peterson,
a down year,
and they won the Pac-12.
It's embarrassing.
I mean, they're the second best team in it, but they did win it because I still think Washington State's a better team.
I agree.
But they didn't win the games they needed to.
Tyler, I don't even want to talk about this game. It was just boring offensively. I saw the third and fourth. I saw the second half because I also had an opening night on Friday for A Christmas Carol, but I got to the after party at the local bar and they had the game on. And so I just sat at the bar and talked to people and watched the game. And honestly, it was just really boring.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a good game. Let's move on to it. Let's move to a conference that's the opposite of defense, the Big 12. Oklahoma beats Texas 39-27, and I wrote down Boomer, and after that I wrote Sooner, and after that I wrote Horns, and after that I wrote Down. So I don't know what to make of that, but I just got really excited.
Seems pretty
accurate. Every other title game I wrote something that was like important to the game, and in this game I literally just wrote Boomer, Sooner, Hands, Horns Down.
I mean, props to Oklahoma. They beat a good good Texas team.
Yes,
not a great Texas team, but a good Texas team. Mm-hmm.
And props to Oklahoma for their standard playing some defense.
Yeah, I think what they decided to do was literally hold on every single play
and hope
be
that
like,
they wasn't called
like
every time.
The refs are not going to call it on every play,
right?
And I mean, it worked. I am so interested to see who Lincoln Riley hires as a defensive coordinator, because you could argue that is the most important hire of assistant hire.
You could because you got to realize this Oklahoma offense. This like we last year's offense got a lot of hype because Baker Mayfield and all that stuff, but this year's offense is sneakily one of the best offenses we've seen. They can put up 50 on anyone.
Yeah,
they can put up 50
I think
easily
they've had
on anyone.
500. They've had 500 plus yards of offense in like 9 of their 12 games this year.
That's insanity.
They're about to shatter the record for most yards per play.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely incredible that this offense is more productive without Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And Baker and like Baker Mayfield's not even like he's killing it in the league. Right. I would say for a rookie quarterback.
I think he's having a good year. He's having a good year.
I think he's having a great year. And yeah, it's just if Oklahoma could ever figure out how to play defense, like good defense,
right?
They could be an Alabama level program,
right?
Which they're like right on that second tier right now, mm-hmm. but they could jump.
Yeah, because Lincoln Riley's a good enough offensive mind. Like he's an outstanding offensive mind.
And I think he's a good. On top of that, he knows how to teach. He knows how to get the players to buy into the system.
Right.
And he knows how to teach the system.
Mm-hmm.
I think credit to Oklahoma for really, they started off pretty slow,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to to rally up and take it to them.
Yeah,
and it was a statement win.
Kyler Murray is really good. I texted you that yet again on Saturday because
he made some
throws that were in his top speed is it's crazy.
It's incredible how fast he is in the open field.
It really is. Like this man needs to. I know he's gonna play baseball, and honestly, it's probably the better life decision because you know no concussions.
Question.
And answer.
Is he the best college athlete? In the country right now.
In the country right now?
Yeah.
Like
he just, you gotta think, he got drafted top 10 into baseball, and he's going to be a Heisman finalist.
Like just pure athlete?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, because I think, can you be the best athlete without being the best at your position?
Yes.
Then yes.
Okay.
Makes
sense.
Because I think okay, so this is when we get into this is when we have a brief Heisman discussion. Because Tua, in my opinion, is the best quarterback in the country. I think he's mechanically he's superior. His accuracy is insane. His decision making is excellent. But I don't know if you can we give him the Heisman after Jalen Hurts did what he did against,
which we'll get to in just a second.
Which we'll get to in a bit. Yeah, we'll get to in a bit. Can we?
It's interesting. I don't know because Kyler Murray is clearly more valuable to his team,
yes.
from a winning perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Alabama has finished the regular season in all 12 games, outscoring their opponents by 20 plus points. No other team in history has done that.
Mm-hmm.
So at the same time, it's one of those things where I would say that Tua had such a flashy early start.
Right.
And he's not played up until the SEC championship. He's not played in these primetime games.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on the better team. I would say he's the better quarterback, but I don't say that he is. I don't know if he's the most valuable. So a lot of it does also become, and we're not Heisman voters, so we don't know, but
We will one day be Heisman voters.
One day. But a lot of it becomes what do you value in your Heisman?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just the best player at that position,
mm-hmm.
or is it who's the most valuable to the best team?
I think we can relate this to the 20. What year are we in? 18. So the 2016 NBA MVP discussion where it was Harden against Westbrook, and people were like, "Oh, but Westbrook is averaging a triple double," and it's like, "Yeah, but James Harden is literally carrying a team into the Western Conference Finals and is clearly the better player." You know what I mean? So it's a matter of, I feel like Kyler Murray.
What do you value?
Yeah, I think Kyler Murray right now is the Westbrook, which is ironic because it's Oklahoma, and Tua is the James Harden of that year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll find out.
That was your brief Heisman discussion. Moving on to the American, UCF beats Memphis 56-41. I wrote down UCF's run defense was bad in the first half. And then I wrote, UCF's defense was good in the second half. And that's literally the difference because Memphis ran for 200 yards in the first 8 minutes of the game.
I watched a recap and I was like, how are these people running this wide open?
I don't get it. The defense was bad in the first half. Really, really bad in the first half. It was insane.
It's just baby Big 12.
Baby Big 12, American Baby Big 12. No, I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
I mean, it's fun.
Credit Randy Shannon for those second half adjustments because in the second half they shut them down. they really shut them down. And it also helped that true freshman Mac Jr. I think really proved himself and basically won the starting job for next year if Milton's knee is still messed up. Yeah, an issue. I think they have a proven backup. This is a Carson Wentz, Nick Foles situation now. That's how I feel. Like I said,
I think that's an accurate assessment.
Yeah, and it was wonderful watching the stands. UCF gave out 40,000 Lays because Milton's from Hawaii, and they had everyone in the stands was wearing Lays in support for Milton. They had the hashtag. It was Ohana, but it was instead of an O, it was 10 and then Hana, because Ohana means family. Fim family yes. means nobody gets left behind. Shout out Lilo and Stitch.
I can do it in a Stitch voice if you want.
No, I'm good. Nobody wants to hear that.
Okay, wow.
I love you, but I don't think that would be great for people in the, with their headphones.
fine. Okay.
And I wrote down, watching a game in the bounce house is now a must. We both are able to get tickets. We both know people. We both have close friends, and in your case, a family member with access to tickets. So I think what we need to do is next season, UCF doing their thing, I think we need to find our way to get to the bounce house.
Yeah, I agree.
I think next – how about
at least a game.
Next year – how about this? Next year, Warren I-4 and Florida State are in Orlando and Gainesville.
Got to make a weekend out of it.
We got to make a weekend out of it. Happy Thanksgiving. I love you, family, and everything, but pod's hitting the road. Pod's Friday, hitting the road. Black Friday in Orlando, Rivalry Saturday in Gainesville.
Let's go.
Who says no? Show me the lie. Who says no?
Not me.
No.
Could
but
not
it was,
be me.
I do want to give a lot of credit to UCF in that second half. I still think they really miss Milton. Mac did a great job, but they really, really miss Milton.
They're able to overcome it, but there was serious, like, just watch the first half. There was a serious,
and they missed him. And in the first half, Milton keeps them in the game.
Yeah.
Milton keeps them, Milton can go score for score. And I think the real true freshman, Mac's a true freshman, he's a great player, but he's a true freshman, and this was his first real test of coming back, because when Milton got hurt in the war on I-4, it was very much... they just needed to protect the lead, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it wasn't put into too much. They were just like, let's run the ball.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And USF's offense isn't going to do anything, which is exactly what happened. But this is a legitimate test, and they passed it.
Yeah, and they did. Credit to them. Listen, I will eat my words when I'm wrong. And I don't think I was wrong in this one, because that first half kind of validated it. But the second half.
I don't feel bad for picking Memphis.
I don't feel bad for picking Memphis, and I don't feel bad
because
for my take
that
of
was
saying,
the type of yeah, it was feel, the type of game.
Right, exactly. And I also don't feel bad of saying that Milton is the UCF offense, and if they want to compete at the highest level, they can't do it without Milton. Mac is a good player, but he's not there yet.
Yeah.
He's not there yet. Let's move forward to the conference we call home, the SEC. Alabama beats Georgia 35-28. I put Jalen Hurts, and then in all caps, redemption story.
Poetry, pure poetry.
Poetry. We love a good narrative. We stan a good narrative, and this is what Alabama.
After like 11 months of talk, this is everything that Jalen Hurts deserves.
This is it. This is really it. We love to see these good things happen to good people. For those that aren't aware, Tua got hurt his ankle. I think it was a Georgia player.
I think it was his knee or his ankle or something. I'm not sure.
When the injury happened, Tyler, I was afraid it was a non-contact, and I was like, "Ooh, if it's a non-contact injury and he's in that much pain, he could be done for the playoffs and everything." And I was very concerned, but turns out there was a little bit of contact, and they say it was an ankle injury. Rumors have reports have said that he will need surgery, but that he'll only be out for 2 weeks, so he should be back for the college football playoff game, which we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, Georgia takes the lead. They're up 28-14. And Bama, Tua scores a touchdown, making it 28-21. And then on the drive, to make it 28-28, Tua gets hurt. Jalen Hurts comes in, scores the touchdown that drive, then comes back and scores another touchdown to seal the game. And just Georgia loses this another game.
This game was one part epic comeback by Alabama, but was also the equally part epic choke by Georgia.
I had to check the sideline to make sure Mark Richt wasn't on there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, is Mark Richt losing control at Georgia? Oh wait, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. But
force of habit.
You have the number one team, the consensus best team in the country, on the ropes. Like literally, no one has done all season.
They're down two touchdowns,
and
in the second half,
and you just choke it away. By the way, that fake punt was dumb.
Can we talk about that? Because
yes, that was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It's not that they went for it on fourth down. Mm-hmm. It's that, okay, you line up in your fake punt formation. Alabama's defense, it doesn't even go into their punt formation. They're literally just playing base defense. Mm-hmm. Like, because they're like, okay, well, they're going to squib it. I mean, they're gonna pin us deep. We're just going to have to deal with it.
Right.
And then be like, oh, okay. So we've got Alabama's base defense, one of the best defenses in the country, against our backup quarterback who we're trying to sneak behind. It's a terrible execution. Just call a timeout. That's why you have timeouts.
Just punt it. Yeah, and at that point, like, if you see the base defense, like, and come on, Kirby Smart, you should be able to recognize a base defense. If you see that base defense, like you said, call the timeout or just – from the sideline, just yell whatever code, because every team has it, whatever code word that says to go to the actual punt, like whatever that code word is, call it out. Like it was dumb.
Here's the dumbest thing to me, though. I don't necessarily disagree with going for it at midfield at 4th-and-11, but if you're gonna do that, it's 11 yards. Put your actual offense on the field. Jake Fromm, the best quarterback you have, mm-hmm. one of the best in the country, put him out there.
Right. You have players.
And this entire game also is just a microcosm of my issues with Georgia's offense. Mm-hmm. That, like, when they actually let Jake Fromm do things and let their playmakers be playmakers, like, they're incredible. Mm-hmm. And then they just get in their own way.
You think they overthought it and they overdid it?
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. Georgia has one of, like, efficiency-wise, has one of the best offenses in the country, except for when they get in the red zone.
Because they're
not good in the red zone. Yeah. They overthink it. That makes sense. They were finally like, oh, we don't really – it's the last game of season. We don't really care. Let's just wing it. Mm-hmm. And they're letting Jake Fromm actually throw the ball, and it's actually working. And then they just – they blew it. But also credit to Alabama and Jalen Hurts for
– Yeah.
Just take it. It was incredible.
And I think that the story of Jalen Hurts is taking away a lot of the criticism from Georgia. Like – People are putting more emphasis on Jalen Hurts and the redemption story and where he was last year and where he is now kind of thing. But people are forgetting that, you know, Georgia decided to go for a fake punt on 4th-and-11, like in a horrible call. And yeah, so don't let that distract you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting statistic that you sent me.
Yeah.
Georgia and Alabama have played 120 minutes in the past two games. Mm-hmm. And actually more because they also had overtime in one of them. Mm-hmm. Georgia has led or been tied for all but one of those minutes and has lost both of those games.
And they were both for champions.
And Alabama never led in the national championship last year until the final play. Mm-hmm. And then they led only for a minute in this game. And that is just incredible.
I want to say
Saban's assistance against him.
Facts. That's a big fact. But I want to say that Saban's a mastermind. But I think at that point, it's Kirby Smart getting in his own way, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still only his third year as a head coach.
Right. Still has a lot to learn as a head football coach.
That's always been my knock on Kirby Smart, is that he's a dynamic recruiter and he's a good defensive mind. But, like, I mean, just watch his first year at Georgia when he hadn't put – like, they hadn't gotten the defense in. They hadn't gotten all the players they wanted. Like, he was in-game adjustments-wise, they were kind of a mess. And they've gotten better.
Right.
But he's still got to get better at that.
Moving forward, the Mountain West Conference. Fresno State beats Boise State 19-16 in overtime. And I put this game on here because it had an impact on – it would have had an impact on the what's it called? It would have had an impact on the group of five New Year's Six bowl games, but since UCF won, they were given that spot. But still, wonderful game. Snow. It snowed in Boise. I had this game on
before. It looks very pretty.
I put this game on because I watched TV through my laptop, as you know. I put this game on before the Big Ten championship game, and when I changed the channel, it was still blue. Like, the field was blue. I go back at, like, halftime to watch some more of the game, and it's all white. And I was like, whoa, that was quick. That escalated exorbitantly fast. But I'm here for it. Fresno State ends up blocking an extra point in the fourth quarter that leads it to overtime. It would have been 14-13 Boise State. And then they end up going to OT 16. I think it was 16-16 going into overtime. And then Fresno State wins 19-16. I think it was one overtime. They went in 13-13. Boise State kicked a field goal to make it 16-13, and Fresno State scored a touchdown to win the game.
Wow.
Love us some group five.
It's a good game.
Magic. Yeah, good game. And lucky for
these
them.
These are good teams.
These are good teams. Yeah, they both stayed in the top 25, so I'm happy for that. Moving forward, ACC, Clemson beats Pitt 42-10. We don't need to talk about this game.
I don't want to talk about it.
Cool, wonderful. Big Ten, Ohio State beats Northwestern 45-24, but I don't want the score to distract you from the fact that Northwestern was in this game until, like, late in the third quarter. And I mean, like, late in the third, early in the fourth, and then they just couldn't keep up with Dwayne Haskins and his shenanigans and his disgusting and inappropriate arm that he has.
Are you talking about future Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Dwayne Haskins?
Oh, we're that far off the ledge now. We're that far off the ledge.
I'm just saying Haskinsville. Rebrand the city Haskinsville. Who says no?
I say no, Tyler. For your own safety, I say no. There were some throws that he made. Don't let the fact that he's thrown like 500 yards distract you from the fact that he's not the most accurate sometimes. Like, let's be realistic.
It's true.
And there were times when he had players wide open downfield and he underthrew them. And I was like, what? You underthrew them?
I've noticed that he does that a lot. And I mean, I do say it's better to underthrow than to overthrow because you give your receiver a chance. But you would actually rather be accurate either way.
Yeah. I think at the NFL level, I think you can get away with that at Ohio State in college. But at the NFL level, that's not something that's going to – that ball's picked off every time at the NFL level.
Yeah.
Of course he has 500 yards. He throws like – what is it, like 44, 45 times a game? Like, but not to diminish him, because he is an outstanding player, and I think so. I think he's a Heisman finalist.
It's not hard to throw. He's in a situation at Ohio State where he's got all the best athletes in the country.
Right.
And you saw Tua have a bit of an issue with this. The Georgia was really the first, one of the three times all year that he was – drop back to pass, and his guys weren't just running wide open.
Right. Right. Like,
athletes on the defense that could actually stop them.
Right.
Exactly. And, like, that's the thing that Dwayne Haskins doesn't often deal with. Ohio, like, the score of this game, yeah, Ohio State is just better. But it is, like, I'm both – surprised because they're so talented, but also not because this team is not that great.
Right.
That Northwestern was in the game until the third quarter.
Yeah, and I think
part of me is not surprised by that at all.
Part of me not surprised by that at all. And we're going to talk about the final college football playoff rankings in a second. But spoiler alert, Ohio State comes in at 6. And I think part of the reason why was stuff like that, where they let these teams that they should be beating and they should be handling and dominating, they let these teams in the game until late. You know? They allow, and I get it, it's difficult to win in a championship game, and it's difficult to win on the road, and it's all that stuff, but when you have the best athletes in the country, when you have a consistent top five recruiting class, when you have one of the best college football coaches of all time, you should be better. The expectations, that you could say the expectations are a little too high, but you know what? They're too high because we know that you can do that, you know?
Yeah, it's so much harder to maintain expectations than to set them.
Exactly.
And it's just kind of a testament that this Ohio State team they're 12-1, mm-hmm. Big Ten champions. But everybody knows that this is not one of those teams. This is not one of those elite teams.
No, it's not.
And they didn't get in the playoff, which is rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and move forward then, because I think it's time that we talk about the playoffs. College football playoff final rankings. Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Oklahoma in that order for top four. And the first two teams out were Georgia and Ohio State. Georgia at 5, Ohio State at 6. The matchups will be Alabama and Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl in Miami. And then Clemson and Notre Dame in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Those are the two playoffs that will be on December 29th, or a few days earlier this year, because they wanted to be on a Saturday. What do we think about this? We got let's go to the fourth spot. We knew Alabama was getting in with the win. Clemson, we knew was going in. Notre Dame, we knew was going in. I may disagree with it, but we knew where they were going in. And Oklahoma came in at 4. The question there was Oklahoma, Georgia, Ohio State. What the teams did on Saturday. Luckily, we had all three teams play on Saturday. So it was, what do these three teams do on Saturday to set themselves apart? I think Ohio State shot themselves in the foot by allowing Northwestern to stay in the game until late in the third quarter. And also, Ohio mm-hmm. State, you can't lose to Purdue on the road by 4 touchdowns on a primetime television game and expect to make the playoff. I'm sorry.
And even though that Purdue team is like we all think very highly of, they are still 6-6.
Exactly.
They needed to beat Indiana in the rivalry game to get to bowl eligibility. Mm-hmm. They lost to Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, like we can't.
I mean, it's not like Purdue has a lot with Jeff Rom right now. Has like a lot of high variance. They can mm-hmm. they have very good potential, especially on offense. But like that's a 6-6 team that you lost to by 29 points. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they didn't beat people enough by enough. Mm-hmm. As a general rule, I have a question for you. Did you get caught up in the whole Georgia should still be at 4, even though they.
Not at all. Not at all.
Because I didn't think so.
Because Georgia lost. Georgia looked pretty bad on the road to an LSU team that, in my opinion, LSU came in the final rankings. They came in at 11. But in my opinion, that LSU team, I mean, they're good, but. It's not like they lost to. If they would have lost to Alabama twice, I may have given it to them. But they lost to LSU and then they lost to Alabama and they blew the game against Alabama. And my tweet, and I guess we can give you a preview. Let's jump to tweets we've shared and then come back and talk about this, because the tweet that you shared with me is by Kyle Grabs, and it is at Grinding the Tape, and he says, if you're upset that Georgia is out of the playoff, just remember they had a playoff game. It was yesterday, and they lost. Like, we knew this coming in. It was 1-4. This game was 1-4, Alabama and Georgia, and they lost the game. Like, that...
Yeah.
What do you want me to tell you? Like, I don't see... Granted, I understand people's view that saying that Georgia... Saying, if you want the four best teams, and you put Georgia in. And it goes, yeah, but... Do we really need to see an Alabama-Georgia game again when we just saw it for a championship? It couldn't be any more high stakes.
Yeah, I agree with you because I think that, I mean, it is in a vacuum. Georgia is clearly one of the four best teams. Mm-hmm. They may be the second best. I would think that I personally would put them at 3, but... in a vacuum, they're clearly one of the four best teams. But it's not so much that they even lost to LSU. It's that they got embarrassed by LSU.
Yeah.
They looked uncompetitive. Mm-hmm. And additionally, I really like that tweet that I sent you. It's basically just, they had a playoff game, and they lost. Mm-hmm. And you know what I would say? People are like, well, yeah, but they were so close to winning. They should get in. And I'm like, you know what they could have done to get in? They could have won.
Yeah, they could have won. They could have held on to the 14-point lead in the fourth quarter they had.
Yeah, I mean, like,
in a championship game. Like, and it's not just a regular season game where you lose and, oh, okay, but I have another game next week and we can build our resume up. But, like, I'm sorry, but a lot of this is also what have you done for me lately? And lately, you've lost the last two games that you've had an opportunity to win a championship. You've lost to Alabama and you blew the game both times. You've shown to me on two separate occasions within the same calendar year, granted that it's two different teams, but within the same calendar year, you've showed to me that you cannot beat Alabama. And if you were going to be put in the four slot after losing to them, you were going to make the plus. It was going to be the four slot. We were going to get a rematch. And the rematch was probably going to be in, I'd say they would have gone to probably Miami as well.
Yeah.
We had a rematch in Miami. And it would have been the same thing. Like, what are you gonna do? It's not like Oklahoma and Texas that had what, like, seven games between they played each other and were able to work things out and come up with new schemes. It wasn't like that. I just don't see it. I understand the argument with Georgia being one of the four best teams in the country, but in a vacuum,
I think they are one of the four best, but they lost twice.
And that has to mean something. It has to mean something, and the criteria for the committee has to mean something. Because I know that they say they give you the criteria, which is head-to-head opponents, conference championships, win-loss, obviously. And then at the end they say, granted, on top of the eye test, you know, which is good. But those things have to mean something. Conference championships have to mean something. Which is my beef against Notre Dame and strength of schedule, and which is also my beef against Notre Dame. But that's what's that. But I will have that conversation in a second. But in the question of, am I mad? Do I think that Georgia should have been put in the four spot? I don't. I think the tweet that you shared with me by Kyle Krabs said it perfectly. They had their playoff game. They lost, and I'm sorry. But I think the committee did show them some respect and put them at five. And I think if they're not in the top four, then they are the next best team. Clearly.
Well, but it's just like, I mean, just to draw back like NFL comparisons, just for people, because that's a more like finely tuned system for playoffs and everything. It's just like, I mean, yeah, the 2007 Patriots were the best team in the NFL that season. Mm-hmm. They lost the game.
Yeah.
They lost the Super Bowl.
Right.
We don't still say go back and be like, okay, yeah, but they should have been the champions because they were clearly the best team.
No, but they lost.
They lost. And just look at last year. The Los Angeles Rams last year were the three seed in the playoffs, and they lost in their first playoff game to the number six seed Atlanta Falcons. Mm-hmm. The Rams were a better team, but guess what? They lost.
Yeah.
And so no one's going to argue that.
And that's one of the whole reasons that we got rid of the BCF and went with a playoff, because we wanted to see results on the field. And what did we see? We saw results on the field this year.
And, I mean, I think that Oklahoma did themselves a favor here in this argument also, but they beat a team, the one team that had beaten them.
Right. So they ended up beating every team on their schedule.
Yeah. It took them two tries for Texas. Mm-hmm. And the first time they lost on the last play of the game by a field goal. Mm-hmm. In a comeback effort.
Exactly.
And I don't even think it was as bad as Georgia's loss. Mm-hmm. And then they avenged it. So I think the committee got it right, in my opinion, for the four teams.
Well, I think the committee got it right.
There's an argument that Notre Dame does not belong there. I would listen to it.
I would give you that argument. I think Notre Dame, a team that, I think if we're valuing conference champions, I think if you really want the four best teams in the country, you put Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and then I think Oklahoma in there. I think Notre Dame gets a lot of credit. I just sent you a tweet, Tyler. I just sent you a tweet right before we started.
This will be my tweets we shared.
Go ahead and
today,
give it to us then. Go ahead.
As we're already giving it to you. Mm-hmm. So you said it was a tweet by Peter Burns of the SEC Network, and he said, "If BYU played the same exact schedule with the same exact results as Notre Dame, there is zero way that would be considered a top four team. The luxury of a national brand defrauding a deserving team a spot in the college football playoff.
100%. I thought, like, I 1,000% agree with him. Tyler, can I read you off Notre Dame's schedule this year?
Yes.
Okay. A win against Michigan at home to open the season, which is unequivocally the best win on their schedule.
Yeah.
Unequivocally. Ball State. Yes.
By 8.
Vanderbilt. Wake Forest. Stanford, which we all know about the Pac-12 this year. Virginia Tech. Pittsburgh. Navy. Northwestern. Florida freaking State. Syracuse, which in my opinion is the second best game win on their schedule.
And they did, but they didn't even play Eric Dungy.
They didn't even play Eric Dungy, and it was a neutral site game. And then at USC, and now they end up playing, they get to play Clemson. Like, I don't get it.
I mean, in fairness to them, they blew out some of those teams. They blew out Stanford, Virginia Tech, Navy,
and FSU and Syracuse, but I think Syracuse has an asterisk because
that's a huge asterisk there.
But you know who their close games were to? Ball State, 24-16. They lost to Vandy by 5. They beat Vandy by 5, 22-17.
Pitt. I would argue that they should have lost that game.
They beat Pitt 19-14. They beat Pitt by 5, 19-14. And then they have what's it called? USC. They only beat by a touchdown. Which, granted, they were up winning in that game. I'll give them more credit on that game because they did. I did see most of that game, and they controlled that game. But you can't tell me they're one of the three best teams in the country in that sense. I can give you a top 10 team because of the way that they dominated some of their games. But I don't think they're a top three team. I think Peter Burns got it spot on. If BYU played the same schedule and had the same results, they would not be in the top four. That's my beef with Notre Dame. For Notre Dame to be taken seriously, Notre Dame, in my opinion, needs to either join a conference, or if you want to keep your independency, then you need to play like the big boys. Like, go out and play. Like, you want to have that kind of time? Go out and play. Schedule a non-conference against Michigan. Go out and schedule a non-conference against Washington. Go out and schedule a non-conference against Texas. Go out and schedule a non-conference against the Syracuse one. I actually really like that schedule because they had a really, really good year. And I understand that, like, it's hard to predict how good a team is going to be when you schedule contracts and stuff. But, I mean, look, Alabama's going to be Alabama. Clemson's going to be Clemson for the foreseeable future. Like, we need to see you perform at the highest level with these teams. You know?
Yeah.
That's my Notre Dame rant.
I will say that I completely understand your argument.
Right. And I understand why Notre Dame is in, and I get it. I just disagree with it. You know? This is my 2 minutes to just let it out right now because there's no point in arguing it and fighting it right now because we have some games to talk about, and I think Notre Dame can pull up a – I don't know why I'm lying to you. But I think Notre Dame's going to get racked by Clemson, but – I think there's a, you know, let's let it happen. I'm not gonna beat a dead horse, you know.
Yeah. I think part of the journey that Notre Dame took on this, and part of the reason they are where they are, mm-hmm. is how their season played out. Because mm-hmm. they beat Michigan with Brandon Wimbush,
right?
And then they still get they're struggling the next two games, mm-hmm. and then Ian Book comes in and they blow out like the next four teams they play.
Right, which is why I completely understand.
Which is why the perception then is that this team that still beat Michigan anyway mm-hmm. is now better because they changed quarterbacks, and that was the national perception, and it just kind of never really died down from that. So I mean, yeah, that's just kind of where it is. Mm-hmm. It is one of those things that in a vacuum, I think they're a top 10 team. I don't think. Like quality wise, they are a top four team.
Right.
But it again does come into that whole like the results do kind of have to be factored in. And I definitely see anybody's argument for mm-hmm. them.
I want to go ahead and move forward past this Notre Dame talk. We talked about the top four teams. I have a serious question for you, Tyler. And I really don't know the answer. Is there a way for a group of five team to make the playoff, a realistic way, like not a dream scenario, a realistic way.
I still contend to this day there was only one group of five team that ever had a shot. It was 2016 Houston. Because if 2016 Houston had gone undefeated, they would have made it in. Because they went 11-1 the season before. And don't tell me that that doesn't matter, because it does. And their last game of the year, they destroyed a 10-win Florida State team.
And they beat Oklahoma to start the season.
They beat in like rather dominant fashion. They beat Oklahoma the next year. They also destroyed the Lamar Jackson top five Louisville Cardinals at the time.
Yeah, they did.
At home that season. If they had run the table in their conference schedule, they went 9-3. But if they had run the table, that was the only team I think that ever would have gotten in. Because you needed 2 years of that. They did everything. UCF is doing everything that they were doing, except for that they didn't. UCF hasn't beaten anyone of the Louisville level, or of the Oklahoma level, or of the that Florida State team level.
You wouldn't put Auburn in the Peach Bowl last year at that level?
Auburn would be comparable to Florida State. Okay. To that Florida State team. Mm-hmm. That was a 10-win team, just like that Auburn team was a 10-win team. Mm-hmm. They get that one win. But here's the thing. UCF, and this is, you could argue this is a major flaw in the system, and I would listen to that and I'd probably agree with it. Mm-hmm. But the way it is that UCF doesn't start off the next season beating Oklahoma, and then later also beat Louisville with Heisman winner Lamar Jackson at the peak of his power. And like that was the third team, and that Oklahoma team was preseason number three in the country. That was the only group of five team I think ever had a shot, because that's the blueprint. You need years of backing it up. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think a group of five team ever will make the playoff. I don't think in its current format that one should, to be honest.
In the way it's currently set up?
In the current format, in the four best teams, I don't think that it gives an opportunity for the group of five. I don't necessarily think it has to. Because the group of five is stuck in this weird middle ground of college football where it's almost like they're a lower division without actually being in a lower division.
Right.
To which I say those five schools, like one of the things, that I will say one thing that the one thing about UCF, everything I've grown accustomed and kind of hopped on a lot of the other stuff. But the one thing that does still infuriate me about UCF is that they can't really figure out what their stance wants to be. They feel that they are being disrespected, which they are. But then they say the AAC comes out with this P6, their Power 6 conference. And they want a brand. They want to be a part of the big boys. But anytime they get excluded, then they say, no, you guys don't deserve us. You're just disrespectful. And it's this constant, do you want to be a part of it, or do you want to be your own thing? So what I would say for that is, I personally have my own idealist version of what I would want to do with the group of five, but it will never happen. But I would say, it's a serious question as to whether those conferences need to get together and figure out if they want to create their own playoff, basically.
Right.
And yeah, that maybe makes them a lower division, but that also might give them some respect. So that's the question.
Let me run through a situation with you right now. Let's say UCF beats LSU.
Yes.
Okay. Which, spoiler alert, UCF will be playing LSU in the Fiesta Bowl. Here's their schedule next year. Their conference schedule, you have Cincinnati, Temple, Tulane, Tulsa, East Carolina, Houston, UConn, and USF. That's their conference. There are four non-conference games. They start with Florida A&M. They then travel to FAU on the road. They then play Stanford at home.
Oh, boy.
And then they travel to Pitt. If they run the table for a third consecutive year with wins against Stanford at home and Pitt on the road, do you think that they get considered? Because they... this year, argue with me what you want, but they went from finishing ranked, I think, 13th last season or 12th to finishing ranked 8th.
There was improvement.
There was significant improvement. They cracked the top 10. They moved up a few times. Do you think, I agree with you, don't tell me that last year doesn't matter, because last year may not matter with a Power 5 team, but with a Group of 5 team, it matters.
Yeah.
If they run the table and they have victories against Stanford and Pittsburgh on the road, on top of their 8 conference victories and their cupcake against A&M and a group of five, hopefully a competitive group of five game against FAU on the road. What do you think?
I think they make it.
You think they make it? Because this time last year, three straight years
of running the table would be an almost unheard of feat at any level of football. So therefore, I would say, yeah. I would say they make it in. Because you got to think, if they beat LSU, they're already starting next year's AP poll, probably up in the top 10.
At least in the top 10.
At least in the top 10.
Yeah.
And then they'll only climb from there. Again, it would take 3 years of running the table. That's how the deck is stacked against the group of five. Which is why I think that, you know, I think they should readjust their own system. But, like, I think it would take a lot. Because, I mean, they would have the – I think that they would have the wins that they would need. Again, Stanford at home is a big one.
Yeah. And Pitt on the road, granted, they beat Pitt this year at home. But Pitt did make the ACC title game.
Yep, they beat a good team.
They beat a good team, yeah.
Well, so, an okay team.
Well, yeah.
Okay. 7-5 conference division champion.
And just to show
don't even know how that happened.
The upcoming non-conference games for them, you have North Carolina and at home, Georgia Tech on the road in 2020, at Louisville in 2021, Louisville and Georgia Tech at home 2022, at North Carolina 2024, and North Carolina at home in 2025. So I foresee some hopefully in like 2021, 2022 they can schedule some more bigger non-conference, but that Stanford game was a good grab.
Yeah.
So all right, my friend. Yeah. All right, my friend. Let's go ahead and move forward. Anything else to say about the top 25? Florida comes in at number 10. We finish behind after the top six, Michigan 7, UCF 8, Washington 9th, Florida 10. Anything else to say about the top 25?
I personally think that UCF should have jumped Michigan, but that is a personal thing.
I personally think UCF should have been 6th, but that's a whole other topic.
Other than that, like, I don't really have a lot of issue with the top 25.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, me too. You have teams like A&M finishes at 19, which – Jimbo Fisher quietly had a really good first season at A&M, very quietly. Penn State finished at 12. Washington State finished at 13th. I think a big one here is Kentucky finishing 14th ahead of Texas and West Virginia, which is an interesting take. Also, another great year for Kentucky. 9 wins, 9-3. Good for them. They have a chance to go for
a 10th win. They've got an opportunity to get 10. Yeah. Opportunity for 10.
That's all you need.
Nothing but bad about that. Say what you will, but at Kentucky, say what you will about disappointment, considering they could have won the East. At Kentucky, that's a fantastic season.
Agreed. Anything else about the playoff rankings?
I mean, we argue a lot about this, and we argue a lot about everything, but I think I will say in the last several years of doing these rankings, I don't think the committee has necessarily gotten it wrong. Any of the years, like I've yet to not understand putting a certain team in. You know, do you feel that way?
I'm looking at the playoff rankings from years past right now.
It was pretty clear cut the first couple of years. Like it wasn't that debatable the first couple of years, but I don't know. It's I don't ever feel like despite like. There's been a lot of disagreement, debate about seeding and about, oh, this team may deserve it. But I've never felt like they put in a team that really, really, truly did not deserve it.
Yeah, I'm looking back now. I think I agree with you. The first year, it was Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Ohio State in that order. The second year, I guess you could argue that Michigan State team, but it's not like they didn't deserve to be there.
But they won their conference.
Exactly. It's not like they didn't deserve to be there. They went 12-1 in the Big 12. Beat
an 11-1 Ohio State team.
Yeah, they did well that year. Like I will give them that. Yeah, and then no, I agree with you. I'd have to definitely agree with you. They've yet to get it wrong. They've yet to get it wrong.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So, all right. Well,
Tyler, we've already done what you've shared.
We've done tweets we shared, but man, that's it for college football. All we got to do is talk about the bowl games now.
It's bowl season,
baby. Bowl season, baby. It's bowl season, baby.
It's so bittersweet.
All right, let's transition into the NFL real quick. Let's talk about the NFL before we sign off. Let's start in Miami, where the Dolphins beat the Bills 21-17. Let me tell you this right here. The Dolphins have scored a touchdown on their opening drive for two straight games, and I don't know how to feel. I don't know what to do with myself. That's something that hasn't happened in forever. We never score a touchdown on the opening drive.
Okay, well, the Jaguars have decided that they don't need to score touchdowns, so I can't relate.
We'll get to your Jags in a minute because I need you to tell me. I know you went back and watched some of this game because you didn't watch it live. And I need to know your opinion. Dolphins beat the Bills 21-17. It was an interesting game because I don't know if the Dolphins defense is just regressing or if Josh Allen is really improving, but I saw some really good things from Josh Allen, both on the ground and through the air.
I've read a little bit about this, and I think the answer, like many answers for these kind of questions, is probably somewhere in the middle.
Right.
I think the Dolphins defense is good, but it's been like, you know, it's not been great, but it can be really good.
Right.
But I think that from what I've heard is that the Bills are really schematically doing a lot to put Josh Allen in a place to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't overly impressive when in his win over the Jaguars, because I watched that whole game.
Mm-hmm.
But he did what they put him in positions to make plays,
right?
And he is making throws that he knows how to make, and he's not being asked to carry them in an air raid style. He's playing he's basically playing a version of the offense he played in college, which was a very run heavy pro style offense,
right?
And They're using that to the best of their ability, which credit to them.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't score a lot, but they can keep themselves in games.
Right.
And I will say that Miami got lucky that Josh Allen underthrew his tight end in the end zone
at the end of the game. That was my literal next thing I was going to say. Yeah, we did get lucky on that front. But also our defense.
What a heartbreaking way to have lost the game if he had completed that pass.
I know. Byron Maxwell, just saying, Pro Bowl, hit two interceptions today. He has 8 interceptions on the season. So look out for him. Dolphins move to 6-6. I'm sorry. Dolphins move to 6-6. We are 8th in the AFC playoff picture.
Bowl eligible.
I hate you. We are 8th in the playoff picture. Currently at 7-5, the Ravens hold the 6th seed. And we are tied with, I don't know, I think we're tied with the Colts. But the Colts have the tiebreaker because they beat us last week. So shout out to you for beating the Colts, because we will transition to the Jags beating the Colts 6-0. Tyler, give us the wonderful Jaguars insight on this game.
Everything about this game was incredibly painful to watch. I'm just saying right now. Like, yes, we won.
And a win is a win. We said this, we texted this on Sunday. A win is a win.
A win is a win. Wins, I mean, yeah. But I will say, okay, in full transparency, I did not see the second half of this game live because I had to go see my show on Saturday. I had a 3 o'clock show. However, I saw the first half, and I went back and rewatched the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Jaguars defense came to play because the Colts have been averaging 30-plus points a game this season, and the Jaguars held them to zero. They goose-egged them.
Right.
And very just a dominant game from the Jags defense. Cody Kessler won his first start as a Jaguar starting quarterback by doing the literal bare minimum. However, it was the literal bare minimum that Blake Bortles could not do. So now I will go back. I don't understand. I never understood this because the Jaguars fired their offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett, and benched Blake Bortles.
Right.
Now, and I never, I talked to my roommate about this. I did not understand why you would do both of those things.
Because now you're
because I'm like that's putting Cody Kessler in the literal worst possible situation.
Yes.
Not only is he having to, he's the backup having to start, and he's not even that experienced. His only experience in the NFL is with the Browns, and bless his heart, I'm not holding it against him.
Yeah, no.
and you get a new play caller. And I personally don't think Nathaniel Hackett was the problem as the offensive coordinator. I thought Blake Bortles was the problem. Why would
as did everyone else.
It showed in this game that, like, why wouldn't you at least keep Nathaniel Hackett one more game? And then if it really screwed up, then you would change. I mean, it's like the team embraced the tank, except for they won a game.
Right.
Every member of the defense was like, no, we're not tanking.
By embracing the tank, by embracing the tank, they ended up winning.
Yes, and I don't understand it. I went into that game being like, we're up 3-0 at halftime. I left it and we won 6-0 when I got out of the play. And you know what? That felt good. But also, once again, everything about this game was incredibly painful to watch.
Nice.
This was not good football, Sergio.
No, listen, I saw about 7 minutes of this game, and I remember it being 7 minutes because I had 7 minutes until I had to go on stage. And I was like, oh, let's check in on the Jags. And when I had to go on stage, I was like, oh, thank God, I have to get away from this. And then when I came back, I said, you know what? Let's just not watch this game anymore. It was bad, man.
Don't blame you.
It was bad. But hey, a win is a win. And that is 2 for 3 for Florida NFL teams. Moving on to the third, the Bucs end up beating the Panthers 24-17. Granted, the Panthers are on a slide. And a lot of people here in South Carolina have been talking. When I turn on my car, the first thing that comes on is the ESPN radio station. And a couple of times I've just heard callers call into their like local radio show and talk about the Panthers and how they're doing really bad and we need to fix it and Ron Rivera needs to go and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong on that. But yeah, man, the Bucks, Jameis Winston playing for a contract. I don't think he'll get it with the Bucks, but he's playing for a contract with somebody.
Somebody will bite on him. I pray that it's not my team.
I pray that it's not mine. You know what I kind of want?
He's going to the Raiders.
I think he is. And it could either be a trade or they could just release Derek Carr and eat up all that cap. But I think would you be mad if Derek Carr ended up in Miami?
I mean, no.
Would it be a bad fit?
I don't think it'd be the worst. I don't think it would be a bad fit at all. I think it would be a good fit for Adam Gase. Mm-hmm. If I were in your position, I would rather draft a quarterback.
Obviously, because you get the rookie contract. But my thing is, this coming year, the best options are what? Justin Herbert and Will Greer? And there's there's teams that need I know at least the Jags need a quarterback, and I know the Giants need a quarterback, and you know what I mean? And the drop down is pretty significant on quarterbacks this year. The year afterwards, now that's a different story, you know.
Yeah,
because the big prize there is
which
the big
fish is why too. I'm mad. I'm mad that the Jaguars are bad this year.
Right, exactly. You want to be bad next year.
I wanted them to be like, it's okay if you're like average this year, mm-hmm. as long as you're bad the next year.
Oh man. Okay, so there go the Bucks beating the Panthers. All three NFL teams won this weekend. Shout out to the state of Florida.
Ruined our draft positions.
Horribly ruined our draft positions. Now we went from let's start the tank to I guess we have to make a playoff run. That's what we went.
Yeah, got to win these next four games.
Got to win these next four games.
Get back to 8-8.
Trying to get to 10-6. Another note before we move on to talking about next week's games. Lamar Jackson is 3-0.
Only stat I need to hear.
Our Lord and Savior, Lamar Jackson, is 3-0.
Yep.
I'm just saying. Just
shout out to all the haters.
Shout out to every hater that said he couldn't make it as a quarterback in the NFL. Remember when Mel Kiper Jr. said he should switch to wide receiver?
Yeah. You know, I never understood that because people like maximize talent and put him at wide receiver. And I'm like, that's actually technically taking the ball out of his hands more.
Yeah. You're not maximizing talent.
Because as a quarterback, you touch the ball every play.
Yeah.
Wide receiver, you touch like every three plays.
If you're lucky.
Maybe.
It's more like every
five. If you're like Antonio Brown.
Right. Oh, man. Okay, let's move forward to the NFL games for next week. I'm so sorry. I'm yawning. Oof, my apologies. Dolphins are hosting the Patriots. Now, I am not too worried about this game, Tyler, because I've said this from the beginning of the season, we always give the Patriots a run for their money. In Miami. Last season, we beat the Patriots on Monday night in primetime. It was wonderful.
My roommate, who's a Patriots fan, went to that game. The only two Patriots games that he's ever actually gone to. All Patriots games that he has ever attended, they've lost.
Can we get him tickets?
And two of them were against Miami.
Can we get him tickets for this game?
I'm gonna try. send him down to Miami.
But hey, it's not that I think we're the better team, because we're not. But I just think whenever the Patriots come down to South Florida, I don't know, man. It's something in the water. Brady's out eating too much Cuban food. Belichick, I don't know, man. I don't know what it is, man. But we always give them room for their money. So I'm hoping for a competitive game. If we win, then we're going all in on the playoffs. If not, then I just need the best draft pick possible. So yep. That's how I feel. What about your Jags? Jags are playing the Titans on the road Thursday night. How do you feel?
Absolutely terrible. Look, it was nice to beat the Colts, and this team could beat the Titans, because up until last year, historically, we always split with them. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, like, I don't know if that's going to happen. I think the Titans, I'm going to tell you right now, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think the defense will come to play, but on the Thursday night game in Nashville, I mean, not the most intimidating place to play, but it's on the road. Mm-hmm. I think that the Titans win. I'm not saying by big, because I think the defense has kind of figured itself out.
Right.
After some issues. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that Cody Kessler is the answer, and that's not his fault. But I don't think he's the answer. We will get Leonard Fournette back, which is amazing that we won against the Colts with
Leonard. That's right. He was suspended. I forgot.
So we'll get him back. So that'll help. Mm-hmm. But I think that the Titans win.
Yeah, I also think the Titans win.
Soon come.
Hey, tank for that draft pick. Tank for that draft pick. And then
gotta get Hastensville.
Nope.
Or Herbert County.
No, I prefer that one. I prefer Herbert County.
Or what is it? What a good thing for Will Greer? Greersville?
No.
Nah, it doesn't make sense. Greer County's fine.
Greer County? Yeah, Greer County works. Greer County works. Yeah, that works. And then, you know, Gator fans who are Jags fans like you will be happy, because they'll have Will Greer back in their life.
Until we suck again, which will also happen at some point.
And then the final game, the Bucs are hosting the Saints, and I think they're going to lose, because that's a bounce-back game for the Saints, if I've ever seen one. Who lost to the Cowboys on Saints, the road.
Oof. The things that they're going to do to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Back-to-back Thursday games for the Saints. They get an extra week. They get the extended time off. I think they'll bounce back. They'll do well. Yeah. All right, Tyler. Our official moment of the week. Why don't you go first? Because I have a couple, and I'm not sure which one I want to do.
Okay. Mine is something you sent me. Is the UAB Blazers football team. Yes. Didn't exist a couple years ago. For those that don't know, University of Alabama at Birmingham shut down their football program for a multitude of reasons we don't need to get into in 2014. And for 2 years, the football program didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Last year in 2017 was the first year the team returned to the field. They went 8-4 in Bill Clark's first season as the head coach, which was already outstanding. And this weekend, they won the Conference USA title game on the road against Middle Tennessee State by 2 points to finish 10-3 in the second season after coming back from the dead. Mm-hmm. And it was an incredible moment to watch, to see the UAB Blazers with players that stuck out, even though they weren't going to be on scholarship, they weren't going to be part of an actual football team for several years, for Bill Clark to stick it, to, instead of moving on from UAB to go to different head coaching jobs during that break, he stayed there and tried to raise money to get the program back. To for that to end is just the second year to have a Conference USA title. Mm-hmm. Is incredible.
Much respect to that program.
And that is my moment of the week.
If you really want to know about that UAB shutting down a couple years ago, there is if you Google it, there's I think it's a USA Today article that I read when it happened, and it is quite shocking as to why the program shut down and the conspiracies that involved the University of Alabama. So like at Tuscaloosa. So mm-hmm. I think it's a wonderful read and will open your eyes into kind of how much the University of Alabama has power in the state of Alabama. But my moment of the week, speaking of the state of Alabama, is the post-game interview between Nick Saban when he's talking about Jalen Hurts. Have you ever heard Nick Saban get emotional, Tyler?
No.
It's scary. It's quite frightening.
Is it?
Yeah, because it's not something that you expect. Like, he does the thing where, like, he's a father that, like, has never cried in front of his kids, and his kid, like, graduated high school, and he's trying to hold it together because he's really going to miss his kid, but he doesn't want to cry in front of his kid because he's, like, the macho man. It's kind of like that. They're interviewing, and they talk to him about Jalen, and he puts an arm around Jalen Hurts, and he says, "I'm so proud of this guy," but, like, his voice is choking up. He's saying how proud he is of Jalen Hurts for sticking to it, and he's a great team player. And honestly, I'm just really excited for the 30 for 30 on this Alabama team in 15, 20 years. Because on the Jalen Hurts story. It'll be wonderful. But yeah, that's my moment of the week. Nick Saban getting emotional, rallying behind his backup guy, Tua. And there's a picture, or his backup guy, Jalen Hurts. And there's a picture of Tua hugging Jalen Hurts after the game. And Jalen Hurts has like a serious face on because there's still like 40 seconds in the game left, but Tua's kind of realized that they're going to win kind of thing. And Tua is smiling and holding him, and it's just a wonderful moment. Something that in an era and an age of player transfers and players putting themselves first, it was really refreshing to see. And granted, I'm not criticizing those players. I think they do need to put themselves first in this kind of collegiate sport environment. Protect your body and get your money. Fully support that. But also, if you want to go the Jalen Hurts route and stay with your team and be the loyal type of guy, I also respect that as well. And it was really nice to see that happen. And again, Nick Saban getting emotional, something I never thought I'd see in my entire life.
And this all comes back to how we all get so focused on what conference championships mean for the playoff and for that kind of picture. We get so focused on that. But I think that the thing you have to remember is that the reason that I will always argue that those conference championship games matter is that it matters for the players and the coaches.
100%.
It matters for the people on the field.
And it should matter for the fan base. It should.
It should. That should not be winning a conference despite, like, even if you don't – Ohio State fans, yeah, you didn't make the playoff. You should still be happy.
Yeah, you won the Big
you
Ten.
You won a conference title. And that might be us disgruntled Florida fans who are having our first good season season.
Let me put it this way. If we win the SEC next year, the year after, and we get left out of the playoff, you know what? I'm not going to be mad. We won the SEC.
Yeah. And those players should not be mad either, because that's the goal that players set for themselves at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And those are experiences and championship moments that those kids and those coaches will remember for the rest of their lives, and that's what's important. And we get caught up in the playoff a lot, and that's fine, but like that's the stuff that's important.
And I think the same thing goes for programs like Kentucky or programs like A&M that haven't had success in a long time and end up having a good season. Like going 9-3, going 8-4 is not a bad thing. That's a good season, you know? Be proud of what you did, be proud of what you had. And remember that, you know, collegiate sports is not only about trying to make it to the – for a lot of these players, trying to make it to the pros and stuff or whatever. But it's also about the bond and the unity between the players and the team and the coaching staff that you will hopefully have for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah.
So those are our moments of the week. Tyler, that is it for this episode. But we will be back next week with our official bowl prediction show. Tyler, this is the show that I think needs the most prep work for us. So I'm going to be working on the rundown throughout the week, finding all of the bowl games – and we'll be spending a minute or two max on each bowl game because we have tons and tons to go through. And obviously we want to spend some more time on the New Year's Six games, the playoff games, and selfishly our Florida Gators. We will be back next week with that show. For now, this is anything else you want to say before we sign off, Tyler?
It's been a great college football season. It's bowl season now, baby. I say this about every season that comes up, but it's the best time of the year because it's the one that we're going through right now.
Exactly.
But it's been a great season, a very eventful season. Mm-hmm. college football is a great sport, and it's always fun to watch.
Fire up your peppermint candles. Lay on the couch. Fire up your peppermint candles, lay on the couch, and watch some football.
Get your Christmas-colored candy corn.
That's it, baby.
get it.
Wait, did you say candy corn?
Christmas-colored candy corn.
All right, this has been another... If you want to host Sideline Judgment with Sergio, applications are now being taken at sidelinejudgment@gmail.com.
Job requirements. Not like candy corn.
Yeah, job requirements. An infatuate hatred towards candy corn. Oh my God, Tyler.
Seasons always change. My love for candy corn will never die. So let's end it on that note.
And with that being said, this has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we are not biased, but go Gators.
And go candy corn.
I'm not ending on that, Tyler. You gotta say fine. Go Gators.
Go Gators.